Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. Hello and welcome to another episode of the FV English podcast with myself, Jordan Florett. Today I will be flying solo as my usual counterpart Dominic Jose Pisonio is otherwise tied up and Kevin Vivas is still on his European tour. Hopefully he will be back soon. Today we are going to be rounding up the Liga Footbay season so far. We're 9 game weeks in and the table is already throwing up some surprises. To introduce you to how we are so far, Monagas are top of the table and Zulia are bottom. Useve are struggling to score and Zamora's unbeaten run ended this weekend. They were the last team yet to suffer defeat. In the goal-scoring charts, Giovanni Bolívar and Kevin Viveros top the goal-scoring charts with 6, closely followed by Achilles Acanto, Erickson Gallardo, Juan Camilo Zapata and Robinson Flores all with 5. And curiously about the top of the table for the goal-scoring charts, are a number of returning or new players to the league. Giovanni Bolívar was at Loudoun United, DC United's USL affiliate last season, and Kevin Viveros is a Colombian new to the league. They are, like I said, at the top. And then amongst the second place scorers with 5, Erickson Gallardo is returning from MLS's Toronto, and Achilles Acanto is at new club Monagas, having played for Deportivo La Guaira last season. But we're going to talk about Acanto more later because it's one of the interesting stories in the 2022 season so far. Almost impressively, Metropolitanos have already accumulated 6 red cards in just 9 games, already more than their 5 in the entirety of 2021. 3 of those red cards came in the 3-1 defeat against Estudiantes de Merida, with 2 of them coming in second half injury time. And they've also picked up 27 yellow cards, only 2 fewer than Deportivo Lara, who top the table with 29. Very curiously though, Metropolitanos, despite 6 red cards in 9 games, are owed an apology by myself. Less so Dominic, who A, isn't here to defend himself, and B, was far less scathing, if you like, of Metropolitanos in our pre-season review. So as I said, so far I most definitely owe them an apology. In the preseason review, along with Dominic, I highlighted them to be, I think, a surprise of the season, but not in a positive way. I thought they could potentially struggle, particularly if they got into Copa Sudamericana group stages, which they did, and yet they're second in the league with the joint most goals scored, 15, and the best goal difference and the second tightest defence. All credit has to go to Jose Maria Moore. Despite losing Abraham Bahachili, who looked set to join Portland Timbers in MLS, but that seems to have fallen through in the past week, he's sadly still without a club. Metropolitanos are seemingly stronger than last season. At least they're certainly no weaker. Robinson Flores on the left flank has certainly helped with his goals. He has 5, 3 of which came in a sole game, a hat-trick against Mineros the week before last. But one of the things I highlighted to Dominic in the preseason review is I felt that they lacked a striker that was going to get them 10 or 15 goals. Charlie Ortiz has come in and has scored a few, but for him to maintain that over the whole season with Copa Sudamericana games as well, and he's a veteran striker, I still think that will be difficult. Can Robinson Flores be the man from the wing to get them 10 or 15 goals? Maybe. His return of 5 is already the best, I believe, of his career. We're only 9 games in. But he, on the left flank, has been the best left winger in the league in 4 of the 9 game weeks so far. And many people are already talking about how this is likely to be his last season in Liga Footbay. If he continues this form over the course of a year, he will have suitors overseas. And I tend to agree. He's performed very well. He's drawing comparisons with Darwin Machis, who is at Granada in Spain. He's around 29. He's had a career in Europe in playing for teams in Spain and as well as in Italy. And people are seeing similarities in how they cut in off the left flank and shoot powerfully across the face of goal with their right foot. And perhaps also being late bloomers. Robinson Flores is still in Liga Footbay at the age of 24. And it's you know, not unheard of, but rare for a Venezuelan player to leave Liga Footvey, you know, over the age of 23 or 24 and still go on to a high level of success. The recent exception to the rule is Jose Brujo Martinez, who has obviously excelled in MLS, having left Liga Footvey at 25. Obviously a different position as defensive midfield, but he is the exception to the rule. Elsewhere in Metropolitanos' squad, Paraguayan midfielder Walter Araujo has started very well. He was a breath of fresh air and a supply of goals in the opening games, where there weren't goals coming from the strikers per se. And also Carlos Sosa. Carlos Sosa was at Atletico Venezuela for the first half of last season, then spent the second half in Colombia and is now back in the capital. But instead of at Atletico Venezuela, who aren't playing this season and are technically a second division club now, he is in the purple of Metropolitanos. So, Metro, easily the positive surprise of the season so far, despite my reservations that they would probably be in the bottom half of the table, are high and flying in second place. But at the other end of the table, two predictions that myself and Dominic weren't wrong about were Zulia and Mineros. We weren't wrong there. We both predicted they would be finishing in the bottom four, particularly with emphasis on Zulia being in a relegation fight. And that's exactly where they are. Mineros are 13th in the 16-team division, and Zulia are rock bottom in 16th. However, both are already with new managers. Mineros, now under the charge of Jorge Duran, who began the season with Deportivo Lara, and Zulia are with Fran Perlo. At the weekend, the two faced each other. It was a clash of two teams under new management, the first games in charge of those head coaches, and it was an emphatic 3-0 win for Zulia, Fran Perlo Zulia, as Panamanian striker Guido Rose scored a hat-trick. And it was an impressive performance. Mineros were not without opportunities to score themselves. Veteran captain Richard Blanco, who's 40 years old and a guaranteed source of goals, even at his age, season upon season, hit the post from a penalty. Had it gone in, probably would have been the penalty of the season so far, one of the best strikes of the season. He took a lack of run-up. It wasn't even like a one-step run-up, it was a no-step run-up. He stood on the spot and kicked the ball. If it went in, it would have been, you know, a moment of genius. But he hit the post. And sadly for him and Mineros, that came 5 or 10 minutes after a shot was taken off his toes. And Kevin Kelsey, a very tall, strong teenage player at Zulia, came into the box down the left, beat his man and cut back for Richard Blanco, who had the whole goal to aim at from about 10 or 11 yards out. But Pampa Gomez slid in to take the shot first and his shot went wide. It was a poor decision from Pampa and Blanco did well not to lose his cool. But as you know, as captain and as an experienced striker, that really showed through. Had that penalty then been converted, the game would have been 2-1 and Mineros actually had the momentum in that moment. They were actually unlucky to go 1-0 down around 20 minutes in. It was actually against a run of play. And Zulia quick fire double with Guido Rose were 2-0 up by minute 25. So it really took the sting out of Mineros' game early on. But it was an impressive debut in the dugout from Fran Perlo, who technically wasn't in the dugout. He was sat in the stands, but he was named DT of the week by Unse Futve. The team of the week by the league, the official team of the week, named Francisco Stefano DT of the week, and we'll get into why later. But Fran Perlo has made the perfect start in charge of Zulia. And it raises the question, was he unfairly sacked from Academia Puerto Cabello in the first place? If you look at the numbers, they were actually doing very well prior to the ownership of Academia Puerto Cabello choosing to let him go. They weren't scoring opportunities that, you know, they should have been scoring. It's fair to say their expected goals was the one of the highest in the league alongside Deportivo Táchira. They'd had games where they should have won by the chances they created and their expected goals tally. For example, they lost 4-1 to Hermanos Colmenares. But if you look at the expected goals data, They actually should have won that game, but they lost heavily. The 0-0 draw with Caracas is a game they should have won by two or more goals, yet didn't. So it was a chance that had they persisted with Fran Perlo, you know, luck would have eventually come their way. These things tend to average out over the course of a season. But they parted ways, and Zulia looked to have received the luck that Fran Perlo was due. Back at the top of the table, as I said in the intro, Monagas are top and are joined by Metropolitanos in second, Deportivo La Guaira in third, and Hermanos Colmenares in fourth. La Guaira were very impressive to begin with the season. They won the league title in 2020 under Daniel Farias, who remains in charge. And in 2021, although they didn't look likely to replicate their title success, they were a very difficult team to beat. And that's how they began their season this year. They won four of their opening six games, drawing the other two, so remaining unbeaten. And they only conceded twice in that time period, both of which were penalties. So for the first six games of the season, they didn't concede from open play. And like I said, were unbeaten. However, they're now winless in four games and have conceded nine goals in the past three games, conceding three on each occasion. And they required a 90th minute goal from Giovanni Bolivar, the league's top scorer, to avoid a third consecutive 3-2 defeat in their most recent game, which ended in a draw at the weekend with Aragua. Is this the effect of the Copa Sudamericana qualifications to group stages? Personally, I think so, yes. Deportivo La Guaira don't have the deepest squad, and they also have a very young squad. That is attractive in the league and is attractive to scouts that Deportivo La Guaira are clearly watched by. They've got a good record of moving players out of the league in recent seasons. Only a month ago, Jose Riasco, who only turned 18 this year, has joined Philadelphia Union, is playing for their second team in MLS Next Pro this season. And like I said earlier, Giovanni Bolivar spent last season out on loan at Loudoun United alongside La Guaira teammate Daluis Paz, both who are at La Guaira this season and some of their key players. But like I said, lacking depth, particularly I think in central midfield, defensive midfield. Arles Flores, their captain, a strong midfielder with plenty of experience, is one of the best. But after him, there is a drop-off in experience and perhaps quality too. And the formations that they're playing this season, I think, leave them quite exposed through the middle. And as the effect of Copa Sudamericana, with the not just the added games to the schedule, but also the travel more so, it leads to a very congested fixture where they're going to be playing on a Wednesday or Thursday during the week in Copa Sudamericana and then playing on a Saturday or Sunday in the league. And it's a lot of to or throwing. And I think that's what we've seen in recent weeks, because their drop-off in form coincides with the beginning of their Copa Sudamericana campaign. What many of you have probably picked up on is that the top four so far doesn't include either of last year's finalists, reigning champions Deportivo Táchira or runners-up Caracas Football Club, the two teams that make up El Clásico Moderno in Venezuela. Deportivo Táchira started well under new head coach Alex Payeres, winning that opening three games, but they are now winless across all competitions in five. It's the kind of form that has led to us unfounded murmurs on social media of a return of Juan Domingo Tolosano, who led them to the title last season before becoming head coach of Antofagasta in Chile. He's been released from his duties there. And although his assistant coach has taken over the reins of Deportivo Lara, you know, like I said, those rumours by local journalists have been, you know, labelled completely unfounded. On the other side of the rivalry, Caracas have struggled for any consistency this season. Again, they are also under a new head coach, Francisco Stefano. Noel San Vicente was let go by the management of Caracas Football Club and has returned to Zamora Football Club. But yes, back to Caracas, they're yet to secure back-to-back wins this season, and they've struggled for a clearly identifiable identity on the pitch, with new head coach Stefano originally trying to persist with two up front. since changing to a 4-3-3/4-5-1 with Sal Gararapa and Ossie Bonsu, who missed the first four or five games through suspension, Caracas have actually won two of their last three games. Now, you know, was Stefano playing a 4-4-2 because he wanted to play two up front? Or was he playing a 4-4-2 because Bonsu was unavailable through suspension? I think he was probably playing two up front because that is the approach he wanted. I disagreed with it from day one because Samson Akinyula, to get the most out of him, should be playing as a lone striker with wingers and the support from a 10. A lot of his play last season was fantastic interplay off of his wingers, Richard Celis on the left and Bonsu on the right. Whereas in those opening games of the season this year, if he was partnered with Miguel Celis, they were treading on each other's toes and not on the same wavelength. And then when he was paired with Sal Guararapa, although Sal is a goal-scoring striker, I still think he looks more comfortable coming in off the wing with a lot of power. He's tall for a winger. He's over 6 foot, but he also has that pace. And Guararapa has remained in the starting lineup, but has shifted out, you know, to the wing, the left wing, actually, with Bonsu on the right. And their most recent victory of the two of their last three, the other one being against Deportivo La Guaira, a 3-2 win, was the Clásico itself. Caracas hosted Deportivo Táchira in a repeat of the 2021 final and made somewhat amends with a 2-0 win thanks to goals from Sal Guararapa and Samson Akinyula, with actually Guararapa assisting Akinyula's goal and Akinyula assisting Guararapa's goal. A first half red card for Deportivo Táchira's Robert Garcés definitely aided Caracas on the way to victory, as did perhaps the lack of red card that Caracas should have got around the 30-minute mark for Ortega, I believe. But after nine games, Caracas are fifth with 14 points and Caracas are sixth with 13 points. They are two teams that we at FIFA English expected to finish in the top four, and it's a long way to go. We're only a third of the way into a 30-game normal season. So there's a long way to go, but at the moment, both sit outside of the top four and then therefore outside of Copa Libertadores qualification. So in conclusion, I just want to run you through the league table and some tasty clashes in the upcoming round of fixtures. As we've said, Monagas are top of the table with 19 points. In second place are Metropolitanos, 3 points behind with 16. In third, Deportivo La Guaira with 15. And in fourth, Hermanos Colmenares with 14 points. Deportivo Táchira also have 14 points, but are outside of the top four on goal difference, with Caracas in sixth, 1 point behind with 13. And Zamora sit seventh with 12 points. It's worth stopping there just to highlight the fact that Zamora actually were the last team to lose this season. They went unbeaten for their first eight games, although they only won two of those games, one of which was very early on in the season. They've actually drawn six. No team in the league have drawn any more. Carabobo have also drawn six, and they are level on points, but one place behind in eighth, with Estudiantes de Mérida also on 12 points in ninth. In 10th, and into the bottom half of the table, Portuguesa and Deportivo Lara are both on 11 points. Portuguesa just above Lara on goal difference. And then in 12th and 13th, we have Aragua and Mineros, respectively, both on 10 points, but with very different goal differences. Aragua have a positive goal difference of just the one, whereas Mineros in 13th have a goal difference of minus 10, the worst goal difference in the league. In 14th, Academia Puerto Cabello have the 9 points, and they won at the weekend to double their winning tally this season from 1 to 2 games. They have another team, as we will touch upon in a minute with UCV, who are struggling for goals this season, just at 8 goals in 9 games so far. But, you know, that was, as the stats show, no fault of Fran Perlo in his leadership of the team. They were a very creative side, and perhaps Perlo was let down by misfiring strikers. In the bottom two, Useve are 15th with 7 points and just the one win. And Zulia FC, although they got their first win of the season at the weekend, a 3-0 win over Mineros, as we said earlier, they are still bottom with 6 points. But that can change at the weekend. So looking to the weekend, some of the tasty clashes coming up. Reigning champions Deportivo Táchira host 2020 champions Deportivo La Guaira. That result could change the top four, with obviously Táchira just outside and La Guaira just inside, only 1 point separating the two. No matter what Táchira do in that game, they can't go top. Monagas are too many points ahead, 5 points ahead, so are unable to be caught. Another tasty clash is Caracas hosting top of the table Monagas. Caracas, as we said, are on 13 points, Monagas on 19. They can halve the gap of 6-3 with victory. And Caracas have a good recent record, particularly at home, against Monagas. Caracas, between the recording of this and the release of this, play away against the strongest in Bolivia. So it will be interesting to see what level of rotation goes on, either in the Copa Libertadores or in league competition against top of the table Monagas. And finally, at the other end of the table, Useve host Mineros. As I alluded to when we went through the table, Useve are the league's lowest scorers with just 4 goals and having scored in only 2 of their 9 games so far, goalless in 7 games. They have a record of 1 win, 4 draws and 4 losses, meaning both Zulia and Mineros, who they'll be facing, have lost more than them. But multiple formations and striker choices are yet to strike gold for head coach Daniel Sasso. He started the season with a 4-2-2-2, a very attacking 4-4-2, if you like, which, you know, bore dividends last season. They were an exciting team to watch. They got enough goals to stave off relegation and almost qualify for the Sudamericana playoffs. But this season, having lost Daniel Mosquera, their main goal scorer of the season and last year, and actually changing their striker department in its entirety, they have been struggling for goals. And in the search for goals, Sasso has broken from his favoured formation and has been experimenting with 4-2-3-1s and 4-3-3s and different striker choices. John Escobar started the season as the first choice, but has been sharing game time with Eric Binto. We've seen Esli Garcia, a winger, also play more down the middle off of a striker. But in Mineros, they faced the team with the worst goal difference in the league, minus 10, having conceded 18. And they come into the game on very poor form, having scored no goals in their past 2 games, but conceding 8. So if there is going to be a chance for Useve to turn the tide, being at home against probably the team in the worst form in the league is that opportunity. So thank you very much for joining me today. It's definitely an experience to do a podcast on my own with nobody to bounce off of. I hope you have enjoyed it and found it informative. And apologies for the fact that there was no podcast last week. We do our best to stick to a fortnightly schedule, but we will make up for it with another podcast next week. So until then, I hope you enjoyed listening and goodbye.